I'm Stargate Pioneer.
I'm Haley.
And I'm Lauren from Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D.
A podcast member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the one you're listening to now.
The opinions expressed are those of each individual. Check out all the other podcasts
at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
Gallifrey Public Radio, a podcast dedicated to everything Doctor Who. Join us each week for discussion ranging from Hartnell to Capaldi. I'm your host, Jay Witten. Did you just say womp womp? And my co-host, Haley Malley.
I like it with the helmet on.
And Keir Hansen.
And that's why, to this day, I can't eat cotton candy.
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But don't worry, if we get into anything too serious, we'll warn you again.
Welcome to episode 172 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where people really need to be careful what they wish for. Do you hear me, Tumblr? Be careful what you wish for. I'm your host, Kieran. Joining me in the GPR studios, as always, is Haley. Haley, how are you tonight?
Steering clear of Tumblr, apparently.
It's all their fault. And holding down the corner, as always, my co-host and partner in time, Jay. Jay, how are you, sir?
I'm getting on Tumblr right now to throw a couple wishes out there and see what happens.
Powerball.
So no, you don't want it right now. We just emptied it.
Your odds are that much better. Exactly. Ever in your favor.
So this week, we drop everything and run around in tiny panic circles for about roughly 36 hours straight as we try and process the official BBC announcement that not only marks the end of the Moffat showrunner era, but the start of his successor's tenure, the plans for Series 10 and when they'll broadcast, and the ripple effect that all of these drop stones have on the ever-placid Whovian fan base, because blowing the situation wildly out of proportion is our extremely long middle name.
Panic!
Oh my
but
god!
Don't panic,
oh my god.
But panic!
The show's over! The show's over!
Panic in the streets of London.
This is the best thing ever! This is the worst thing ever!
Yeah.
The Whovian fan base in one simple statement.
Yeah. An incredible amount of information gets dropped on us in a single statement release. And you know, my phone started blowing up, not only from messages and tweets and so forth, but literally calls from people going, oh, did you hear about this? You got to change this. What are we gonna do about this? What do you mean we gotta wait this long? And everything came along with it. So with so much being handed over in this official statement, which we will link to in the show notes, so everyone who hasn't, you know, somehow stayed clear of the whirlwind over the past 4 days or so, every paragraph in it, every person that's quoted from it, whether it be Moffat himself, Brian Minchin taking the helm, or any of the BBC executives that are quoted as well, each piece of this provides a pretty interesting, if deemed factual, we'll talk about that too, a little glimpse into all the changes that are slated to take place. So I figured one of the best ways that we could do this is kind of take the press release apart in pieces and look at what each chunk really has to say. So Haley, why don't you take the kind of the opening salvo of this thing and tell us what it reads.
All right. After six incredible series at the helm, the multi-award-winning Stephen Moffat has decided to step down as the lead writer and executive producer of Doctor Who. Stephen took over the reins on Series 5 in 2010, and during his tenure, the show has become a truly global success. He has been responsible for introducing the 11th and the 12th Doctors in Matt Smith and Peter Capaldi, as well as two companions, Amy Pond and Clara Oswald, and iconic characters and monsters including River Song, Missy, Rory, and the terrifying Weeping Angels. Plus, the smash hit 50th anniversary special in 2013, which saw fans around the world celebrate the world's longest-running sci-fi series with the Doctor, Matt Smith, David Tennant, and John Hurt, battling the deadly Daleks in a feature-length episode. Stephen's final series will air on BBC One in spring 2017, and there will be a Christmas special in 2016.
Okay. Well, they tee up with a lot of platitudes.
Yeah.
Make you feel great about his accomplishments. You know, go through a nice, you know, nice CV of all the stuff that he's done in his six series. Let's look at that first. Can't contest any of those accolades.
Oh yeah, no.
Right.
Even going so far as calling him responsible for the global success of the program as it stands right now. I think RTD had really done an excellent job in getting the reestablishment of the series going, but I think as far as the global reach that it really has attained, or at least the scale of it at this point, you've got to say that that's Moffat's era.
Oh yeah, that's completely his doing. I mean, that's when RTD was running the show, it brought it back to the forefront. The British people had their, you know, they had Doctor Who back, but it didn't have a reach. You know, you had fans of the show from, you know, who had caught it on PBS in the classic years and things like that over here that, you know, they were excited about the fact that it was back and they were hunting it down, but it wasn't something that everyone was watching for every week or, you know, trying to find the news on. It was, you might hear one of your really weird, eccentric nerd friends over in the corner talking about something, but, you know, that was about it. And now, I mean, I was at work the other night and somebody came in, so, oh, and they've got the same shirt I'm wearing on right now. You know, you run into them everywhere now. And that started with series 5. That's when everything really took off. You look at all the merchandise that's out there right now and almost every last bit of it is, you know, Matt Smith's sonic screwdriver or the, you know, the TARDIS interior from, you know, series 5 or even, you know, the TARDIS exterior from series 5.
Right.
It's, you know, all of this stuff came out with the fifth series and, you know, with the same day broadcast that started with series 6. I mean, you can't deny that this really did become a global property with Stephen Moffat.
Mm-hmm. Now there's where the thorn is at the end of that rose stem. So, you know, you say all these wonderful things and all these accolades, and then they hit you with the fact that Stephen's final series is going to air in spring of 2017. So, you trip over that the first time you read it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but it's okay. There's going to be a Christmas special in 2016.
Oh, well, that makes it all better.
Of course. Yeah.
So we've only got like 11 months until we get new content. It'll be fine.
Right. I guess with some of the things that are said in some of the segments of this statement to follow, we'll get more of the explanation or what their justifications as to why they say that is. But this stinks. I mean, as much as I know people have or, you know, their positive or negative reactions to Moffat's tenure, the fact of the matter is, even with him at the helm right now, if you're not a fan of his creative direction, waiting a full year for a Christmas episode and then getting put back on the hook again for 3, 4, possibly 5 months to start getting his final series stings a lot.
Yeah.
But, you know, I feel like this is the only way we might ever get River again. Because they couldn't insert her into...
Well, they're bringing it around to what really matters.
Right. We couldn't get a full story arc with River in it again, just with the way the last Christmas special ended. But they could do another Christmas special with River and the Doctor hanging out, you know, their domestic life.
It's the new spin-off series.
You time jump from one Christmas to the next.
We're not getting actual Doctor Who proper. We're getting the spin-off, Life with River and the Doctor.
Yes.
It's on the riverfront.
Whoa, phrasing.
I think that's a parody. Not appropriate for young audiences.
That just turned into a Skinamax special.
Oops. All right. Our article or our press release continues here, and it quotes Moffat directly saying, you know, it feels odd to be talking about leaving when I'm just starting work on the scripts for season 10. But the fact is, my timey-wimey is running out. While Chris is doing his last run of Broadchurch, I'll be finishing up on the best job in the universe and keeping the TARDIS warm for him. It took a lot of gin and tonic to talk him into this, but I'm beyond delighted that one of the true stars of British television drama will be taking the Time Lord even further into the future. At the start of season 11, Chris Chibnall will become the new showrunner of Doctor Who, and I will be thrown in a skip. So he's staying upbeat about it. Mm. You know, he's positive about this, and it's a reminder he still has a season to go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone's calling this, you know, that's out. He quits. I've seen some of the headlines and things saying, you know, drops Doctor Who and moonwalks off into the distance. No, he hasn't even finished writing season 10
yet. He's barely started, according to the statement.
Yeah. I'm just starting to work on these things. I just wrote down my byline by Stephen Moffat.
Well, I mean, that's the most important detail,
But he brings up some good stuff here. Everyone was concerned, well, you know, Broadchurch is a very intense show and a critical acclaim and everything. And everything, you know, so many people absolutely love Broadchurch as its own series. But Chibnall's finishing up what's going to be his last season with that program. So it's not as if they're overloading his schedule.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I say this because I'm trying to temper some of the things that have been floating about online about saying, well, this doesn't make any sense. There's other people who had much more of an opportunity to be able to devote all of their time and their attention to this. I don't think that that's systematically accurate because it's a matter of, you know, look at how many things that Moffat had on his plate that his name was on, and he was also had some creative input on some series that he was not credited for. He would come in and assist either for episode punch up or things of that sort as well. So they're capable of multitasking like this, but Chris is not going to be trying to juggle both of these juggernaut series at once.
Right.
And Moffat will have plenty of time to polish this season and make sure everything is tight if it's not coming out until spring 2017.
Wait, hang on. Moffat, make sure that it's tight. I know all the words.
It can happen.
Gatiss is going to have plenty of time to write the sequel to Sleep No More.
Still not sleeping.
Sleep no more forever.
Sleep less and less. More less sleeper.
Sleep no more-er.
All right. The next section, Jay, take this, because this actually gets into some of Chris's street cred.
Right. So it says, like Stephen, Chris Chibnall is a lifelong Doctor Who fan and a multi-award winning writer and executive producer. He has most recently achieved huge success with the triple BAFTA award winning ITV series Broadchurch. His other credits include BAFTA nominated The Great Train Robbery, United, Law and Order UK, Life on Mars, and Torchwood. Chris Chibnall's debut series will launch in 2018.
I think I've heard of this Torchwood program of which you speak.
But I mean, that's the thing, is Chris Chibnall is a name that anyone that follows Doctor Who even more than casually will have heard at some point. I mean, he's got five episodes proper under his belt. He wrote 42. Then the two-parter, The Hungry Earth and Cold Blood, bringing the Silurians back into New Who. He did Pond Life, which, I mean, those were fun and got really, really heavy at the end. Then we had Dinosaur on a Spaceship. Say what you will, it was a fun episode.
Yeah, it was.
We also got The Power of Three, and then what I think is probably like his crowning jewel on Doctor Who. He did that, the scene that never got filmed, P.S.
Definitely.
Yeah, all the feels. But I mean, looking even at some of his Torchwood episodes, you know, he did, Day One, Cyberwoman, Countryside, you know, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, Exit Wounds, like these. I don't know about you, but Countryside is one of those episodes that sticks in my brain because it is so freaking good.
Absolutely. Yeah. And also, I mean, and they reference some of these other series, which some of us are more familiar than others, I mean, depending on how much British drama you tend to watch. But I mean, well, for the procedural stuff for Law and Order UK and those things, that's pretty straightforward out of the box. You know what you're going to be getting with those. Yeah. But he was also involved in the writing for a number of episodes of Camelot, for those of you who are fans of that particular series. I didn't get a chance to see the Great Train Robbery miniseries, but I know he wrote two of the episodes out of, I think, six that ran. But he also wrote two episodes of Life on Mars. For any of you who are John Sim fans, obviously, if you've never gotten a chance to see Life on Mars, please, 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 please make it part of your required watching because it's an incredible series. And it's very wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey in its own right. He even wrote for MI5, or as they called it, Spooks in the UK and things like that, too. Grace Point, So obviously the stateside variant based on Broadchurch. So he was able to sort of cater or spin that premise to a U.S. audience. And knowing that whether you want to admit it or not, there's a certain degree of the creative direction and the writing emphasis for this for Doctor Who now that has to think more global appeal from time to time. It's still an inherently British icon and will continue to be for as long as it chooses to. But they are always aware of the fact that they have a reach well beyond the United Kingdom. So, mm-hmm. This is actually an argument. Well, that's not an argument. It was a discussion that I had gotten into with a couple of other podcasters when this news was breaking over the course of these last few days about his preparedness to take on this particular role, this meeting point between what is considered kind of the head writer and the executive producer as showrunner. And he's been behind the scenes as Moffat's right hand for over two series. And yeah. These last two series are the ones that we have been in such adoration of. And I think he's been kind of an unsung hero in that creative direction and that input. So I have all the faith in the world.
Yeah. And that's the thing is he has been there for it. Even though we didn't get an episode from him in the past two series, it's because he's had his hands in other things. He's been kind of helping to keep everything on track. Basically, you know, where we talked about how Series 7 was all over the place and you just couldn't keep it straight and everything. One of his main jobs over the past two series has been to kind of help orchestrate that and pay attention to the details that Moffat wasn't able to and kind of make sure that everything is heading in the same direction. Yeah. So I'm excited about him taking over the show.
Yeah. Haley, take the next segment here.
Yeah, this is kind of interesting. This is what he had to say, the new head writer and executive producer, Chris Chibnall. Doctor Who is the ultimate BBC program, bold, unique, vastly entertaining, and adored all around the world. So it's a privilege and a joy to be the next curator of this funny, scary, and emotional family drama. I've loved Doctor Who since I was 4 years old, and I'm relishing the thought of working with the exceptional team at BBC Wales to create new characters, creatures, and worlds for the Doctor to explore. Stephen's achieved the impossible by continually expanding Doctor Who's creative ambition while growing its global popularity. He's been a dazzling and daring showrunner, and hearing his plans and stories for 2017, it's clear he'll be going out with a bang, just to make my life difficult.
It's like, go ahead and follow that one up there, Chief.
there's some subtext in here that I'm curious to know if I'm the only one picking up on. So obviously with this saying that, you know, he's taking the reins, he's fully aware of everything that we've been crediting Moffat for as far as being able to take the business of the program, and expand upon that while taking the occasional risks with the format, the direction, the tone, so forth, introducing characters, introducing villains and so forth. So he's aware that he's got that kind of looming over his shoulder. But at the same time, he knows that since Moffat is now aware of the fact that he's got a light at the end of the tunnel, he's got an end game, that he can pour everything into Series 10 and just, pardon my expression here, just go balls out with it. Because it's his opportunity to, he's not going to try to paint Chris into a corner and hand him something. Here, I made it a giant flaming wreck. Your turn. So, I'm curious, though, and I don't know, we'll go through the rest of this little statement here, but I don't know if there's anything that says that Moffat will stop writing for the show.
Mm-mm. And that's something
he's
just
not going to be in charge anymore.
Yeah. Right. So I would love to see him come back as a writer for, you know, one episode per series or something like that, because look at the contributions he made to RTD's era. Mm-hmm. You know, The Empty Child and The Doctor Dances, you know, standout episodes in series one, Girl in the Fireplace, Blink. Come on. I mean, Silence in the Library and Forest of the Dead. I mean, these are all, like, when you poll people and say, what is your favorite episode from the first four series? These are all going to be in like the top three. Mm-hmm. You know, Moffat, nobody ever said that Moffat wasn't a fantastic writer. It's, you know, they have a problem with the way he's running the show. But no, I would love to see him come back in just the writing capacity.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm sorry. I have no doubt that he's going to stay in there. It's just a matter of, you know, is he going to limit himself to an episode a season? Mm-hmm. Will he? You know, if they're going to stick with a two-parter format, you know, maybe that allows him to be able to take a long-form story and kind of go out with it that way. Mm-hmm. I'm also curious to know, you know, Chibnall knows, you know, as a writer of nearly a half a dozen Doctor Who episodes to his own credit, whether he's going to want to sort of take the reins of doing the season opener and closer, as Moffat has fallen into the practice of, sort of as the way to bookend, set up the tone, and then close the books mm-hmm. on each series. I don't know necessarily he's going to want to do that.
Yeah, it's a good question. Although I would love to see the interplay around dinosaurs on the spaceship get swapped around. And I want to see him like walk up to Stephen Moffat and just give him like a 3-word headline and be like, write an episode. Yeah. Snakes on a plane. Go for it.
Acidic cyborg taxis. Go.
Because I think like that Moffat could pull that kind of challenge off. It might not be what anyone expects it to be, but
what was the challenge they were doing just the other week where they were taking a bunch of writers and they had each append a sentence to the story and it was an old writing exercise, but they were basically building a story upon it was either the sentence of the previous writer. I don't know if it was a sentence or a paragraph, mm-hmm. but the story just got weirder and weirder and weirder as they handed it to each person. I think it's still ongoing. You can kind of track it on the BBC site, I believe. I know Sarah Dollar was involved in the mix. Our good friend Mark Gatiss was involved in the mix there too. Okay. Now comes a kind of an interesting statement here from Charlotte Moore, who is a BBC One controller. You know, so think program director, you know, as far mm-hmm. as program coordinator, as far as we see here in the States. And she says, quote, "I want to thank Stephen Moffat for everything he has given Doctor Who. I've loved working with him. He is an absolute genius and has brought fans all over the world such joy. I will be very sad to see him leave the show, but I can't wait to see what he will deliver in his last ever series next year with a brand new companion. I have decided to schedule Stephen's big finale series in spring 2017 to bring the nation together for what will be a huge event on the channel. 2016 is spoilt with national moments including the Euros and Olympics, and I want to hold something big back for 2017. I promise it will be worth the wait. I would also like to take this opportunity to welcome Chris Chibnall, a wonderfully talented writer who I know will bring something very special to the hit series."
All right, let me get my death threats out. I now have a new addressee.
Yeah. There's a 1-2 punch in this, as far as I see it. Personally, taking responsibility for pushing the series into 2017 is the first shot to the jaw. Mm-hmm. But then to say that you're doing so because 2016 is chock-a-block with other things going on, including the Euros and the Olympics... Okay, can someone do a quick check for me as to exactly when the Euros, the football competition, actually is held? I'm not entirely certain whether it's a late summer thing or...
Let me see. It's not listed as a reason, but I wonder if Chibnall's schedule is part of the reason for pushing back this last series from Moffat, if he won't be free to actively run a show until 2018.
I would think that would have been an easier thing to say then, rather than this particular statement. If it were just take the Olympics though, that typically is July.
Yeah.
So that's not, and it's not even being held in Europe. It's in Brazil. So that's off the scope for something that would have started airing in September.
Yeah. Looks like June is a lot of the dates I'm seeing.
Yeah, that's what I'm seeing.
Okay. So both of these events will be nearly forgotten by the time Series 10 will be.
I think you're missing the point. It's not so much that it's the viewing audience. It's the fact that, you know, most of the crew is going to be like, no, I'm going down to the pub to watch the game. I'm not working today. No.
All right. I know the Euros are huge. Absolutely huge. They're bigger than the World Cup when it comes to the European viewing audience, or at least the more centralized around Northern Europe. But I think Haley's point is probably more on the nose about just making sure that everybody's schedules jive mm-hmm. For the passing of the torch. No pun intended with the Olympics. Anyway,
what you did there?
but that would have been an easier thing to say. You know, we put all of our faith in Chris as the successor, and to make sure that he has all the time devoted to making Series 11 as incredible as we know that it's going to be. We're going to be shifting the broadcast schedule so that he can transition and give it his full attention, or something of that sort. I think I personally would have said, "Oh, okay, yeah."
Maybe it's a combination of a lot of elements that were like, you know, it's just better for everyone if we push it. Because maybe Moffat wanted more time to write this series if it's going to be his swan song.
Right.
Yeah.
I guess he's still in a position to be able to say that. He's like, you know, I really want to push things back so that I can pour 110% into this. He has the clout to be able to say so.
Right.
Whether or not broadcast executives choose to adhere to that. Oh, that's what you like, huh? Well, we want to hear from one more of these execs. Jay, so, what's our last statement here?
Then Polly Hill, another controller at the BBC Drama Commissioning, said, "Like Charlotte, I would like to thank Stephen for his brilliance, which has made Doctor Who a global hit under his tenure. Chris Chibnall is the perfect successor to take over the reins of this incredible show, so I am delighted that his love for Doctor Who has made it impossible for him to resist. Chris is an incredible writer, and his vision and passion for Doctor Who gives it an exciting future and promises to be a real treat for Doctor Who fans across the world."
I can't contest that he's going to do some incredible things with the program. I have no reason to believe otherwise. You know, and I will defend him based on his track record, based on his involvement on the show to date, both, you know, in the limelight and behind the scenes. I think at the end of the day, the only thing that I'm really kind of tripping over is just the broadcast schedule.
Yeah, and that's really the only thing. Is it's just, yeah, we get two great series, and I mean, you think about the past 3 years. Or, you know, where we had the 50th anniversary year where we had nothing, absolutely nothing up until November. And then we got, you know, more than we could have possibly bargained for. But, you know, we didn't have a series in 2013, you know, the year of the 50th special, and we got nothing. You know, then, you know, we follow that up with two incredible series that, you know, have gotten critical acclaim. And then it's like, okay, well, we're just going to. Yeah, we're going to step back for a bit, take a break. And it's hard to fathom that.
Mm. I'm curious to know what that's going to mean. Is that going to set the standard for broadcast from that point on? Is it now going to become a spring show?
It's been in the spring before. It kind of wanders through the year, just depending. Yeah.
But it takes major resets like this, or, you know, upheavals, to be the thing that pushes it 2 months this way, 3 months that way, so forth. This is one of the larger shifts, I think, as far as overall gaps.
Was it series 5 that had a mid-season break?
No, series 7.
Yeah,
no,
they
no,
didn't.
No, 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 no. Right before Let's Kill Hitler, there was like a summer break. Like, they had half the series in the spring, and then they took a summer break, and then they started back up in the fall.
Yeah, there was a break. I don't recall if it was that long. I'll go back and look at the release dates. But yeah, Let's Kill Hitler was the return after the hiatus. I just don't remember exactly how long that lapse was.
I know there was enough of a break, because I remember them saying, you know, the Doctor will return in Let's Kill Hitler or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But
obviously when we got to Series 8, that's when that was one of their big statements, is, you know, we're going to do this uninterrupted. We're going to run these straight through and keep the irons hot, which I'm assuming they're still going to do. There's also now been rumor as to whether or not are we now going to be pushing ourselves towards more. You remember the rumor that was going around a little while ago about we're just going to become eventually a series of special episodes?
Yeah.
You know, maybe a total of 5 broadcasts or what have you, or it's going to start looking more like Sherlock as we go and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Heavens forbid.
Maybe Capaldi wanted more time to film, so it would be less strenuous.
It's a possibility, but...
Wild speculation based on nothing. Let me put that out there.
But it gets you back to also to the fact that we've been recently hearing from Capaldi saying, you know, I have to be aware of when it's time for me to step back. So if he kind of associates himself with Moffat's command, is he going to want to be part of the transition process. A lot of people have said, you know, I enjoy the changes that happen within the series or within the program better when there's something that carries over. This doctor carries over with a change of companion, or this companion carries over with a change of doctors, so that I've got something that stitches together. And granted, Moffat took a huge gamble when it was new production company, new doctor, new companions, new. But you have to wonder, since he's going to be, one of the last things he's going to be doing for the show is giving us a new companion in series 10, could that then be our bridge to see us, just, you know, who knows how far in the immediate future, into our 13th Doctor?
It's a possibility. I mean, what better way to go out than introducing a new Doctor? I mean, that's, you know...
Yeah,
I mean, that's exactly what RTD did, was he stayed through the end of what would arguably be his doctor. And mm-hmm. I mean, no one's denying that Capaldi is really Moffat's doctor. I mean, he might have had more time with Smith,
He is the personification of the doctor that Moffat has wanted on the series for time untold.
Yeah. So, I mean, I can see that being the case. That's like, well, my doctor's leaving. It's time for me to go, too. But I don't want to think about that, because that sucks.
Well, and when that happened, Moffat took over in that episode when Smith came on screen. Right. From that point forward, he was running the show.
Mm. Yeah.
Right. Well, it definitely led to a large amount of listener feedback.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, real quick before we do that, it was about 2 months between A Good Man Goes to War and Let's Kill Hitler.
Okay, yeah, all right, I recall. Yeah, it didn't seem terribly, terribly long. It was just, it felt more like a U.S. series hiatus. Mm-hmm. They take their mid-season breaks and do whatever it is they do. I actually got into a bit of a Twitter discussion with a couple of other Whovian experts. Alyssa from Whovian Feminism, who we had on a couple of weeks ago. And we were chatting with Will from over at the Mutter Spiral podcast with Yosemite Forest and such. And he was actually really, he was very quick to say, I'm really not happy with this. I'm not happy with the Chris Chibnall selection. At least his knee-jerk reaction, like the moment the news hit, that was his first kind of reactive pull. And I wanted to kind of take this apart. I was curious about it because, and Alyssa noted this too. She said, "You're kind of in a minority here. I've heard a lot of people. I've never really heard anybody say anything disparaging about him." And he said, "Well, you know, I think it's definitely me. You know, because Broadchurch is a huge success. No one can possibly contest that." And he says, "I'm sure that the BBC is glad to have him. I'm just not personally a fan of his stuff. I would have preferred maybe Toby Whithouse or Jamie Matheson." And I kind of chimed in and I prodded him a little bit and I said, you know, I'm not sure with those particular selections with either Toby or Jamie, because if it were just somebody who were selecting as a head writer, if there was just a head writer position that they were looking to fill, then I could see those selections all day long. But you're looking for somebody as a showrunner who needs to have a considerable amount of production experience. And that's a whole other challenge that neither of those gentlemen, as qualified as they are as writers, haven't had that side of it to the extent necessary to really take on something like Doctor Who. Mm-hmm. And he said, okay, well, yeah, I can see that. You can't argue with his success. So, and Broadchurch is just enormous. So he came around on it and said, you know, I'm hoping for the best, which is what we all are. Mm-hmm. Alyssa then kind of buttoned it and said, that's the thing about it. Because I may be on and off about some of his episodes, but if you look at what he does, running Broadchurch, writing, producing, controlling the creative and tonal focus of Broadchurch, it's an amazing product. So that gives her the reassurance that he can take something like this on.
Mm-hmm.
It may mean it's going to become much more intense, because Broadchurch, oh God... Not exactly family drama.
Not so much, yeah. Hmm. So then we got some other feedback as well. Brandon said, reading this makes me feel less uncertain. Loved series 8 and 9. And that was in response to a tweet from us saying that that Chibnall had his hands in the past two seasons, that you know, he was there throughout it. So...
You can do a little hunting. He doesn't speak out much. There aren't a lot of interviews out there where he talks about some of his involvement behind the scenes, but there are a few. And when you do, or if actually you might find more video from some of his appearances, check YouTube for some of his statements on panels and things, because it's really interesting to see how he kind of quietly orchestrates it within his degree of control, you know, working right behind Stephen's shoulder. So,
And then Ben jumped in and said, kind of sad that the best modern Who writer is leaving, and all I see is people bad-mouthing him. What an ungrateful fandom we are.
Yeah. I have been asking Ben about what the reaction was, because we got the news. Let's see, locally we got it on Friday evening, which meant that it was the midnight or shortly thereafter when these things was really starting to hit the PR news wire in the UK. So you're either out for the night and you're not really checking your phone for news and things if you're out of the pubs or whatnot or out catching a show, or you're asleep and you don't get the news until Saturday morning. So when Saturday morning was rolling around, I started prompting some of our UK listeners about what the general tone was, and he said there was a bit of raging going on, and that was his explanation. There's still people bad-mouthing him with everything that he's accomplished. So mm-hmm. We are a complicated crew.
Yeah. One thing that Andy had to say was Chibnall with Torchwood experience a possible return of Jack Harkness?
Too soon to tell, Andy.
You know, and that's one of those things I don't know, because, well, I mean, one, Harkness was introduced in episodes that Moffat wrote. So who has the rights to Harkness? Because I know RTD took him and ran with, you know, he was in charge of Torchwood. So I'm not sure, like, who has the say-so about whether or not the character can even return?
It's probably in BBC's hands, I would think. I don't mm-hmm. think they make contracts anymore where the writers and creators have control of the characters.
I don't know.
Because they learned their lesson from Terry Nation, right, that's right about.
No, but then, you know, obviously Moffat has a lot of control over River Song. Like, he was showrunner, so maybe he had the authority to do so, but he wouldn't let anyone else write her.
Yeah, I think that was probably just him saying, no, this is mine, you can't play with it.
Yeah, probably.
He's allowing Nick Briggs and Matt Fitton and the Big Finish crew write for her character. So that's been, at least, you know, it's opened the doors on that.
Right. And then Scott got on Facebook and said, thank you for all the adventures through space and time. I do agree your timey-wimey with the Doctor needs to come to its end. It will be grand to get a fresh mind with new ideas and different perspective.
Yeah. How many times have we said it's a show based on change?
Although to me, that does kind of sound like a very polite way of saying, all right, yep, there's the door.
Bye, Felicia.
Well, it's a lot. It's a lot to process. And we're not done, I'm sure, because there's going to be a lot of continued reactions from people, cast and crew. So,
well, yeah. Actually, that takes us into our first news story. You guys ready to do the news?
Yes. Yarr. More news?
One of these times I'm going to record video of that and post it.
Of us chair dancing?
Exactly. Care with his little finger going and Haley's head bobbing. Yeah. All right. So the first news story that we've got is actually just it's like a minute and a half video of a young woman interviewing Matt Smith from the press tour for Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. And you hear her say, okay, I have one question that's about Doctor Who. And you know, Matt kind of gives like this little grin, like, I knew there had to be one. Okay, go ahead. And so she asks him, you know, what are your thoughts about Stephen Moffat leaving the show? And you know, it's just a nice little response from Matt Smith. Not anything you wouldn't expect. So if you want to find it, you can, it'll be in the show notes. You can go watch it. Like I said, I think it's like a minute and a half. So,
And I'm sure we're going to get a flurry of these over the course of the next year. I'm just going to keep saying months. That until it just no longer applies. Year.
Just turn it into one of those words that just loses meaning the more you say it.
Whatever will we talk about? Well, some of the things we will talk about were, as mentioned in some of the previous episodes, Haley and I will be out at Gallifrey One's 27th season. Yeah. Station 27 of Gallifrey One out in LA on Valentine's Day weekend from the 12th to the 14th. I've got a couple of panels we'll be on. Haley, what did you end up, what's the panel you're speaking with?
I don't remember. I know I have a list.
one of them was the Marvel panel, correct?
Yes. There was it was Marvel and DC characters something.
So listen to Haley talking about Marvel and DC characters something at a movie convention. And then on Saturday, I'll be speaking on a panel called Bringing Us Together, which is about ways of getting family members, the uninitiated into the series. It's just about the kind of the global appeal and the opportunity to be able to bring new viewers in, something we've talked about quite often here on GPR. So
episode 42. Yeah.
Which why that number sticks out in my mind.
I just found that very interesting. It's like, so our episode about introducing people to that was, man, I wish I had actually planned that so I could take credit for it. Because, wow. yeah.
And speaking of convention stuff.
Yes, Long Island Who has put out another announcement of talent that we'll be attending. Leela's coming to New York. Louise Jameson will be at Long Island Who 4. So they've already got quite the guest list going, and we're still, what, 10 months out?
Yes, yes. The fact you're already knowing that you're going to be enjoying Sylvester McCoy and Sophie Aldred, which is any opportunity you get them actually together. I mean, Sylvester's entertaining enough, and he lives for the crowds, which is one of the things that Eli Who is always great for, is because there's the great vibe that the talent has, being able to kind of rub elbows with their fan base. But now you got Sophie as well, and she's just incredible to have on panels and things. She always has some great insight into the history and legacy of the program and what she's up to now. So, and then you add Louise Jameson to the mix, and it just gets exponentially better. So early ticket sales, save a bundle, get your hotel block, join us for all the things.
We will throw this out there. If you are a canine builder, if you construct your own canines or whatever, absolutely take some time this year, build one, give it to Louise Jameson. We want to see her leaving the convention with like 15 canines in tow.
Just trailing behind her, just following around the corridors.
Yes, mistress.
Perfect. We will be resuming what was going to be our scheduled classic rewatch of The Keys of Marinus. We obviously had to drop that like a hot potato in light of the news, but we'll be resuming that when we come back into episode 173 next time round.
I think the exact text that I got from Keir Friday afternoon was cancel this week's topic. And I had just like, I found it roughly about the same time he did. And, the conversation was just, yep, dump everything. I wish we could record early this week. So, yeah.
But we will. This instant reaction cast where each of us are just driving home yelling into our phones. Oh, my God!
No, we've learned. People don't like those.
Oh, but yeah, so you've got another week. If you haven't gotten your Keys of Marinus DVD, you can go and click on the link in this week's show notes and get that from Amazon. You can get it shipped to you Prime. It's, get it nice and quick.
You're having plenty of time. Yep.
Yeah, so.
Have it by Thursday.
Absolutely. So, all right. Well, this has been episode 172 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, Mr. Moffat, thank you.
And this is Keir saying, it's been a cracker. You've loved it.
And this is Haley saying, wasn't that clever?
We'll see you guys next week.
I'll see.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com. Tell us on Twitter at Gallifrey Radio or on Facebook at facebook.com/Gallifrey Public Radio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You should also go to gunnageek.com and check out lots of other high-quality geek-centric shows, or visit forums.gunnageek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2016.
I'm Mr. Clever. Oh, he's not writing himself into the text too much there. They should have a Mr. Clever Moffat. It's just a guy cosplaying Moffat with the big metal thing on the side of his face.
Oh, God.
Challenging people to Whovian chess.
That would be awesome.
Oh, I don't remember seeing anything that told me which panels I actually got on.
Yes. There was an email that went out that had... They're using sked.org as their online tool. And if... You got an email from them, actually from Sean at Galley, that links in and tells you the first time you try to log in with your GalleryPublicRadio.com email address, it gives you the temporary password and everything, and you get that changed through, and it'll from that point on you can always look at my schedule, and it just shows you. It kind of works a lot like. I wish they had a better app for it. It's still browser based. I think maybe at some point we'll have an app going with it, but. Like when we go to Dragon Con every year, they have their own app that has this brilliant interactive schedule because there's so much going on and there's at least a dozen concurrent panels and things that you could potentially, because it takes place across four or five hotels, mm-hmm. That you go ahead and you check off your first and second choices for everything that you plan to attend, and then you can link up with other people's schedules and say, oh, I'm going to the same thing, or, oh, you know, I'm going to be getting out of that one earlier than you, so if you want me to start waiting in line for the next thing, I'll go stake out a place in line, and you find me, and it works out really, really well. So as these cons get bigger and bigger, those kinds of interactive scheduling apps become more and more of a great help. But this thing for us should be, and I think even if you're not logged in, if you go to their schedule.
There's an option to look at the panelists. I just saw that.
Yeah, just search, find yourself in the panelists, and it'll show you what you're in there for.
Yep.
Interesting.
Alyssa's got a couple. Deb Stanish, our friend over at Verity's got a three, and she's got a great one that she's moderating.
She's got one called In Defense Of. What a clever name.
they have a segment on Verity that they call In Defense Of they just use as a way of sticking up for something that normally gets maligned on the series. Our In Defense Of, actually, that I'm recording tomorrow is going to be an interesting challenge.
What's
not
that?
Because of the guests or anything, just the topic itself. It's like authors and filmmakers and things that have a controversial viewpoint on things, like Mel Gibson or Orson Scott Card or
Tom Cruise,
H.P. Lovecraft. You know, can you appreciate what they create even if they're a right bastard? So,
well, a perfect example of that is Tom Cruise.
Yeah. Well,
he's not necessarily a creator, but yeah. Yeah.
Mel Gibson is the better example.
I think Tom Cruise, because there's some of the stuff that he's in that I absolutely adore, even though I can't stand the guy and want to see him hit by a bus. But
I don't know. On a personal level, I don't know if he's necessarily... I don't know enough of... if he's come out and made any statements or anything about his particular views. He just happens to be kind of linked with kooks.
Yeah.
Did you watch the... what was it? Going Clear documentary they did about Scientology and such?
No.
Was it called Going Clear? Getting Clear? I don't know. It's just, I think it may still be on Netflix right now. Even though the Scientologists are trying to get it taken down because they're calling it slander or what have you. But all it is just, it's just discussing how, like, Travolta before him and so forth, and how they were basically catered to and placated to try and become unwitting spokespersons for the right. For the organization as a fundraiser source. They would just trot them out at speaking engagements so that people would donate tens of thousands ahead into the church.
Oh, would you look at that? That's convenient. The X-Files complete series is on sale on Amazon for like $130 right now on Blu-ray.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, no, they did a sale. I saw it. It was a Blu-ray for a couple weeks ago. It was like $74. But, I mean, right now you get it all on Netflix at the moment. So, granted, the Blu-rays probably have a lot of really great stuff with, you know, Spotnitz and Vince Gilligan and so forth. Get some of the behind-the-scenes stuff. But
Yeah, I don't care. Sorry.
Okay.
I did see a great thing, like, you know, the Shirt a Day sites and all that stuff. The best one I saw, apparently one of them today was doing a whole bunch of, X-Files themed shirts. And there was one with the classic, like, UFO picture, like, you know, the UFO above the trees and whatnot. Yeah. Except instead of a a UFO, it was Captain America's shield. And instead of saying, I want to believe, it said, I want to be Steve.
I want to be Steve.
Meanwhile, I'm just waiting for every release from the Deadpool marketing team.
Oh, jeez.
Just anything that they put out there, please. Anything.
Oh, the ring pop was hilarious.
Where did you carry that?
Oh, they really have a firm grasp of who the character is, and they've really matched the marketing scheme to go along with that.
Which is what amazes me with these helicopter moms who say that they want a PG-13 edition. Yeah. Has your child ever
read? I don't think they didn't film a PG-13 version of this.
No.
I don't think there's no story.
Have you gone and, like, I know you guys have watched the Red Band trailers. Have you seen the Green Band trailers? It's the same thing.
There's one.
Oh, yeah. It's the same thing, except they cut out about, like, 30 seconds. Yeah. Because it's just, you can't put any of that, or like the shot is cropped down so much that you almost can't tell what you're looking at anymore. Like, it's hilarious how they try and cut this stuff out. And I'm like, you can't make this a PG-13 movie and it still be intelligible.
No. The character is inherently adult. That's the cornerstone of what he is.
Yeah. I mean, for a comic book character to literally blow someone's head off just because they said that they like the Star Wars prequels, I'm like, come on. You can't turn that into a kid-friendly version. Yeah,
this isn't like a kid-friendly character that they made an adult movie about. It's an adult character, right. And they were true to the source material.
This isn't a gritty version of Spider-Man. That's not what we're looking at here.
The Teletubbies meet Spawn. It doesn't work that way.
Although I will say that's one thing I'm horribly depressed about is the fact that we won't see any exchange between Deadpool and Spider-Man on screen. Like, that's rough.
Right. Well, you know, they slowly started to concede to give Spidey over to Marvel for, you know, some small inclusion.
Yeah, but
there,
that was Sony. That's not Fox. Don't play ball with Marvel. I mean, they're no.
Right, but it's still Sony's property, so they could still say yeah. Let's throw a stinger on the end there.
That's a long shot.
Wasn't it? Which one was it? It was the Spider-Man movie, Amazing Spider-Man 2. They put the X-Men scene at the end.
That's
of the
because Webb went to work on X-Men, and that was kind of like his last thing. He's like, no, I need this in there, and that was all Mark Webb. That I don't think that had anything to do with the studios. It's like somebody was just like, fine, we'll give in.
What about can they name check the character?
No, they're not even allowed to name drop without permission.
Or even just say, you know, that, you know, the web-slinging little twerp.
Yeah, no, because if you remember Ant-Man, was it the shawarma scene or just at the end of the movie when Falcon's talking about stuff or what? Oh, no, it was at the end of the movie. That was the first reference that we got to Spider-Man. And that wasn't even like, we've got a guy that swings and a guy that climbs walls or something like that. And like, they couldn't even do that until like the contracts were signed and done. Like, that was a last minute addition to that movie.
I heard a piece in the news the other day. I'll have to find the original article where they were talking about, you know, this just shows that a lot of it, you talk about college grant money at waste. Did a study to find out whether or not you could have the ability to climb walls if you had the tactile elements on your hands and feet. Spider-Man would have had to have size 114 shoes and had hands with fingers 38 inches long in order to have sufficient grip to climb a wall. Imagine that freakish thing coming at you, looking like a tree frog with this giant thing.
I still think the greatest thing is the cartoon I've seen. Like, it's, you know, imagine if Spider-Man's ability wasn't to shoot webbing, but to shoot actual
spiders.
Like, crime would drop to zero in no time flat.
Put that television down. No.
Jesus. Oh,
I saw a video the other earlier today, Kieran. I thought of you. It was a shed full of spiders. Like, just crawling all over the walls and the ceiling and then dropping from the ceiling onto the floor. Huge groups of them.
You know, that's when I developed Nitro 9. You just nuke it from orbit.
That's the whole time I was watching this, I was like, kill it with fire. It's the only way to be sure.
It can't. Yeah, and then go out and jump up and down on the ashes to make sure nothing's still twitching.
You're going to get that close to the ashes?
Yeah, I wouldn't even bother with that. No, it's
stolen feet. Someone else's legs.
I would figure out how to create zombies and have them go stomp on it, because that's clearly the lesser of two evils.
I've developed cyborg technology just to trample dead spiders.
Necessity is the mother of invention.
All right. I got some viewing to do.
Oh, yeah.
See what the Stanley's Lucky Guy series is all about.
I just found it funny that 2 weeks in a row we've gotten a Whovian connection on Gallivant, because this week we had Reese Shearsmith. So, yes, Whovian ties with a slight Gatus taint, but he was...
Gatus taint?
Yeah, see, I made the same comment. It's the name of my new band.
Gatus taint. But yeah, he was delightful. I loved it. It was fantastic. So I'm just interested. I'm waiting for next week when like the whole series ends with like David Tennant popping up in a role or something, because they're building to something here.
Yeah. Eccleston.
Oh, God. That would be brilliant.
Just walking into the courtroom, there, the throne room. Excuse me. Hello. Quick question.
Oh, God. No, I want to see that. I want to see Chris Eccleston playing Gallivant's older brother. that would be fantastic. No pun intended.
Yes. Or maybe intended.
Maybe slightly.
All right.
All right. Bye.
There's the train.
There's the train. Time to go.
Haley's ride's here.
All right. Good night.
Bye. Night. Cease.